Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and super excited to dive into this episode because we are chatting with someone who just finished their first 100-mile race, and they trained for this race for 6 months, but really over the course of 2 years. And this person in particular had gone through different training modalities, different training styles, and everything for a year and a half. And then after a year and a half, he actually came to me. And this was before I had officially launched my coaching business. And with that, he came to me and he said, hey, I'd love to know what it's going to take to really train for a 100-miler. And that 100-miler was Coldwater 100 in Arizona. And we worked on a plan together. He stuck with the training. He got it right. We even had to pivot a few times, as he'll mention in the training as well. But through the ups and the downs, he was able to finish this 100-mile race. Plus, he's got a full-time job. He's got two young kids and he's got a wife. So he was able to get his training done without blowing up the priorities in his life. And he's going to share exactly how he did it so you can do it too, whether you're training for your first or fifth or seventh 100-mile race. You're going to get a lot of insights from this episode. Now, as I mentioned before, Kiefer is one of my clients, and I helped him to get to this 100-mile finish. Now, if you're training for a 100-miler or you're training for your next ultra, and you want a coach to help you design a plan that is specifically tailored to you to help you hit your goals without blowing up the other priorities in your life, such as family, such as work, or anything else, social life, you name it, I'm happy to design that plan for you because that's what I help to do with my athletes that I currently work with and coach. So, under my coaching program, you get one-on-one support from me. You get unlimited access through text. I design a plan that is 100% tailored to you, your personal schedule, your fitness, and also backed by science and research as well. You also get on group coaching calls that we have at least twice a month as well with the whole Everyday Ultra Racing team. And you also get a nutrition plan tailored to your specific race and training style and everything else, helping you to be fueled for your race. Plus, you get pre- and post-race calls, and the list goes on of all the benefits. But if you would like me to help you accomplish your next ultra marathon goal, right now we currently are building a wait list because we are at capacity. But if there's openings in the future and you want to get on our first come, first serve wait list for coaching, feel free to shoot me an email at everydayultrapodcast@gmail.com and I'll make sure to put you on the wait list. And if spots open up and it's your turn, we will totally be happy to have you on the team and I'd be happy to work with you as you go through your next ultra. The other thing I want to highlight too as well really, really quickly is if you're looking for some awesome running content to dive into on the big screen, then definitely check out my buddy's new film, The Free Outside, which is by Jeff Garmeyer. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Jeff, Jeff has done the calendar year of Triple Crown through hikes, so at Appalachian Trail, Continental Divide Trail, and the PCT all in 1 year. He's got the unsupported FKTs on the Arizona Trail and then also the Colorado Trail. And the movie called Free Outside is documenting his unsupported Colorado Trail FKT, which is super revolutionary because, like, never before have we gotten an in-depth look at an unsupported FKT to the level of this film. I got to see it. It's incredible. Seeing Jeff push through the lows and also the highs that he experienced on the Colorado Trail is truly inspiring. And so whether you're an aspiring thru hiker, you want to know a story of resilience, or you just want to soak up the adventure of what it's like to be on an unsupported adventure on the Colorado Trail, Free Outside is for you. And definitely check out the movie if you're looking for great running content. So I'll put the link to Jeff's movie in the show notes and definitely check that out if you can. All right, everybody, now let's get in this episode with my client and my friend, Kiefer Gilbert, as he talks about his 100-mile race strategy. Let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm super pumped for this episode. I think I might be the most pumped for this episode than any other episode that I've done, just because today we're not only talking about someone who had just finished their first 100 miler, but this is someone who has been going for the 100 mile finish for a couple years now, through the ups and downs of training and things like that. And we're going to talk about his amazing 100 mile finish at the Coldwater Rumble, 100 miler, just a couple weeks ago here in Arizona. And what's super cool about this guest too today, he's not only a friend of mine, he's not only a brother from another mother, I like to consider, but also he was my very first client when it came to Everyday Ultra coaching. So a lot of people don't know this, but I officially opened coaching in October. But before I opened coaching, I wanted to kind of just test pilot out with a few athletes. And Kiefer, who's our guest today, which I'll introduce in a second, he was like so down to be the first client of the Everyday Ultra Racing team and kind of be the guinea pig into this whole operation that we now have running too. So it's been an honor to be working with him as my first client and seeing his progress made. And I mean, he'll talk about like some of the progress, but the progress on his pace, the progress on his endurance, the progress on his mindset that he made over the course of 6-7 months that we've been working together was just absolutely incredible. And we're going to detail the training. We're going to detail what worked for him, what led to his success, what led him to really have the mindset to push through a 100 miler. So if you're listening and you're looking to, you know, either go for your first 100 miler or learn what it takes to finish a 100 miler, if you have done it before and you're looking to hear other perspectives, this is going to be a great episode with you, with no other than my client, my friend, my amigo, Kiefer Gilbert. Kiefer, man, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and congrats again on an amazing finish at Coldwater.
Thank you so much, man. And thanks for having me. I know you've deflected this numerous times already, but I couldn't have done it without you, man. I appreciate everything thus far. And it's an honor to be on, man. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course, man. And thank you so much for that. I know, and I always deflect that like too, just because I say like, hey man, I can write a plan, I can do the programming, but you know, it takes a lot of the consistency and the dedication to get it done. And I mean, you did that so well in your training. And you know, it's not even like running's the only thing you do. You have a job that is very demanding. You also have a wife and two beautiful kids. You're also an ambassador for Arizona Wilderness Trail Club, which is super cool. So when it comes to, you know, doing a lot of stuff, it's not like, you know, you have not a busy life. So it's just so awesome to see that consistency diving in. And we'll dive into the background and everything. But right off the jump, I want to just kind of go right into the value before we go into the background and kind of the training and everything. What do you think was the biggest determinant in your success in this 100 mile finish just a couple weeks ago?
So not even only in the finish, you know, this is kind of presented itself as a lesson that I took away from the race. And something that I try to, you know, apply in everyday life, man. You know, I'm 5 years sober. So that's kind of one of the catalysts that got me into running in the first place. But I think one of the biggest things that I learned out there, man, was don't stop. Don't fucking give up. Like, you're going to go through trials and tribulations throughout life. You're going to go through trials and tribulations throughout races and all of these different things. And whether you're battling something internally or personally or whatever you're going through, man, just don't stop. Don't give up. Like, I think everybody that runs these races has kind of learned this lesson that there's going to be this threshold that you're going to hit almost every single race. And you're going to push it just a little bit farther every single time. And you'll learn to mitigate and deal with all of those things and find new ways to handle that. And I know Courtney Dewalter has like a really way of looking at it. She calls it like digging a little bit further into that pain cave. And we all throw that term around and use that as a reference point for, you know, when you're kind of in that hole. And it does feel like a hole, man. Like, you're out there on the course. This usually typically happens like at the beginning of the night section. And it just feels like the world is like pulling you down to like keep you from trying to like finish this fucking race, man. And I think one of the biggest takeaways was, you know, my pacer, Darren, he had this thing, man. He's like, everything that you're feeling is normal right now. And it's okay to feel this. I don't care if your feet are shuffling an inch in front of the other. We just got to keep moving. And that was probably one of the biggest takeaways that I pulled out of that race, that I've been, you know, kind of cross-examining things that I do in my life and my day-to-day, whether that's spending time with the family or I'm working on a feature that's got a piece of code that I can't figure out or wrap my head around. Just don't stop. And whether that's, you know, somebody that's battling sobriety or having substance abuse issues or anything like that, man, just don't fucking give up on yourself. Like, there's light at the end of the tunnel. There's sunshine after the darkness, however you want to, you know, wrap that up and personalize that to something that means something to you. But I think going through that really rough spot in the race and then bouncing back in the way that I did, and finishing pretty strong, you know, I had a lot of lessons to learn at that distance for the first time, but that was probably the biggest thing, man, that like there is more in the tank than I think we all realize sometimes.
So freaking good, man. And I appreciate you sharing that. And what's super cool with sharing that is, you know, knowing you, that never stop mentality has been not just obviously a highlight of your 100-mile finish, but through your training and through your life too. And like, I definitely want to talk about that. So it's kind of a two-prong kind of question that relates to that don't stop mentality that kind of also dives into your background. Talk to me about like how maybe going through that journey to sobriety has kind of helped you in ultra running, and like the first thing. And then the second thing I'd love to hear too is, you know, talk to me about like this whole process leading up to Coldwater, because sure, like you and I, we started working, you know, 7 months prior to the race, and like we had a 7 month block together and we got it done. But like the 100-mile kind of race was something that's been on your radar for 2 years. And so kind of a two-part question, one on the sobriety and how it's kind of helped you, and then two, the 2 year journey leading up to this point too. I'd love to kind of hear a little bit of both, because it kind of also shares more about you too for the listener.
Yeah, man. You know, I was in the hospitality industry for the better part of a decade. I was able to contribute to kind of the growth of the cocktail scene and the cocktail culture out here in Arizona. You know, this was probably a decade ago at this point. It's just crazy to say out loud, man, that we started kind of chipping away at building some progressive cocktail programs and taking kind of this culinary approach to, you know, executing drinks and things of that nature. But that kind of led to me having access to a lot of things that were becoming detrimental to my personal life and to the version of myself that I like to present to the world. I had kind of gotten to a point where I wasn't recognizing the person in the mirror. You know, I had just had my firstborn, and my sobriety date is actually Christmas. And it was my son's first Christmas that I decided to get sober. Dude, we went out Christmas Eve. Just got trashed with my friends, man, and just not taking into account that like there was a woman at home taking care of my child while I'm going out and doing this. And I was taking away from the experience that everybody else was going to have that next day for Christmas. I mean, I was just miserable and hungover, and I'd hit a point that I was like, this is not good for anybody. This is having a negative impact on my family, and this isn't the legacy that I want to leave behind for my kids to remember. And obviously my son's never going to remember being 1 year old and dad being a fucking hungover slob on Christmas Day, but I do. So that was what kind of kicked everything off, man. And then it was peculiar timing. And I know this person gets a weird stigma around him in the ultra community, but it was almost in sync with me getting sober and then David Goggins' book kind of coming out. And his book actually didn't push me to running. Initially, when I got sober, I started doing jiu-jitsu again. I have a background in, I wrestled in college. I have a background in jiu-jitsu. I've competed in that. I've competed at national level in jiu-jitsu. And when I got sober, I started training jiu-jitsu. And I had a weird relationship with it, right? So I'd competed in college wrestling, and grappling is like second nature to me, man. I love it. I still follow all that stuff and keep tabs on who's doing what in jiu-jitsu, and drive my wife absolutely crazy pulling up college wrestling on random nights when it gets some coverage on ESPN, because no one likes watching wrestling, dude. Like, let's be honest. Unless you wrestled, like, no one gives two shits about what's going on that map, but I geek out on it. So I had noticed that there was some weird ego stuff going on with myself when I was training jiu-jitsu, that I felt like I almost had unfinished business with like my college career. I didn't finish out. I wrestled 1 year as a freshman and then had moved on. And I knew I wanted to keep fit, and I was kind of getting back into hunting at the time. And I had remembered Goggins talking about his like first 100 miler and talking about Moab 240. And I hadn't had really much interest in doing any of those things, but the thread that I was starting to connect, getting back into hunting and like finding, you know, Cam Haynes and him, like two, you know, prominent figures in endurance sports, I was really curious to the mindset portion that I don't feel like they directly talk about all the time. It's kind of this underlying message with it, where it's this, like, I don't quit when I'm tired. I stop when I'm done, kind of thing. And so I was wanting to find a way to kind of tap into that. And so I just kind of started picked up and started running. I knew a guy that had done a 50 miler in the past. So I had messaged him and I'm like, hey, how do you do these? Like, I don't really comprehend like what all you need to do to finish these races or go about any of this stuff. And I think it was almost 3 years ago, pretty close to the day, we had gone out on South Mountain. We did like a quick little 3 mile loop, and dude, I was hunched over at Pima Trailhead and was just like puking my guts out. Dude, it was so bad. It was so bad, man. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know how to pace. I didn't like climbing while running was like, my heart was probably about to explode out of my chest at that point. And I got that taste of it, man. And I have like a weird kind of stubbornness about myself, and it's a good thing and a bad thing, but I'll look at things that I see people doing, and I'm like, I could do that. I think I could figure that out. I think I can do this feat that I see these people doing. And so that was kind of where the kickoff happened in the running journey, man. And I think we had ran a little bit through the summer. I'd taken a break through the summer, and I ended up signing up randomly for McDowell Mountain, that 50 miler. And I think I started training in like October, seriously, like starting to do actual long distances. And that race is at the beginning of December. And I was running like fucking 7 minute miles at certain portions of it. And I pretty much hiked all the way from Thompson Peak to the finish line. I was miserable, dude. So after that, I had kind of started entertaining like finding coaches and finding out how to do this correctly. And it's just been a process from there, man. It's been a little bit of a 2 year journey, kind of going through that, doing some different styles of training and learning what my body responds to really well, and finding training modalities that I enjoy also. And that was kind of, you know, cue in, you know, starting to work with you. And that was when I really kind of started finding my groove and finding some fitness and doing all of that, man. So to kind of tie that together for that first part of the question, man, it's been an absolute journey. There has been some ups and downs, and I think to kind of segue into portion two of that question, where like what we did kind of leading into this race, man, we're like a month out from the race, and my whole household catches COVID. All four of us, dude, we had to kind of cancel Christmas with the family and everything. But we ended up testing positive that Monday, and Wednesday I was like, I'm good, dude. I'm going for my runs and I'm doing everything. And I finished out that whole week of training. I don't suggest that anybody. I just want to really quickly disclose that. Don't run through COVID.
Oh man. And I'm curious, like when you have like these kind of snags in training, like, right. And like life snags, right. Cause I think like, you know, we can always have like a perfect training plan and things like that. Like what had helped you? I mean, is it just as simple as that? Like keep going kind of mindset. I mean, like obviously like you and I, we worked very extensively to like retool the plan and like kind of seeing what we can do and like where we can adjust things if needed. Right. Like we were planning on doing a longer taper, and then there was like that time you got sick. So I guess like talk to me about kind of like that retooling process.
It's interesting, man. So, you know, and I'm sorry I keep making, you know, references from previous sports and things of that nature. But I remember when I was doing MMA, one of my favorite quotes, and I think it's from Mike Tyson or something of that nature, one of those heavy hitter boxers, everybody's got a plan until they get hit in the mouth. Mm. And I've noticed, man, we all have these ideas in our head of how training's going to go and how the race is going to go and all of these different things, man. And I think one of the lessons that I've learned throughout training is like, just get rid of the expectations. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of accept things as they come, take what you can, make the best of it in that moment and do what you can with what you've got. I'm very fortunate to have people in my corner like you and everybody that I was able to lean on when things were going bad, but you've got to kind of find that spot where you can sit down with yourself and just kind of assess, like, am I going to throw a hissy fit that I'm sick right now and pretend that the race is completely botched, which it's not, it's going to be okay. Like there's moments where, you know, during that race, you know, out there on the cold water course where like my body wasn't doing what I wanted it to do. And like, it's okay, man. You just gotta, and I said this earlier, just keep moving, keep going. Don't stop.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that, man. I love that. And I love how you talk about like no expectations. Cause like one quote that like I always like really have always thought about in those kind of things is like when you trade your expectations for appreciation, like life kind of changes. And it's like so awesome to see that's how you take it along the ride. And that like, even though you had these things that pop up that would seemingly be like, oh yeah, like training is kind of done for, it's, you know, not in the bag anymore, you still found a way to like get it done and get in rock and roll. And I think that's just been the one of the big indicators of your success is like continuing to keep kind of going like amidst those kind of life changes. Kind of talking about a little bit of the training more, you did also talk about a few kind of points earlier how like you kind of change up training modalities. And I think that was like such like a cool part of our training was like having you just on a completely different kind of regimen in terms of like how you train, like what the, you know, modality is, like what the philosophy is, and like seeing the progress. So talk to me a little bit about that and kind of the results you've seen. Cause like, I don't want to spoil it, but like, I mean, the results in your paces were, I mean, we would be texting like almost every day, just like freaking out, just being like, dude, like, look at this. This is fucking awesome. So talk to me, I guess, about like the change in modality and then kind of the results that you saw like as a result of it with the modality shifts that we made.
Yeah. So previously what I had been doing was completely heart rate focused. It's not that I disagree with that modality at all. I just don't know if it worked very well for me. And specifically here in Arizona during the summer, man, it was just starting to wear on me going out for long runs. It's hot, dude. It's over 100 degrees before the sun even comes up during the summer. And it was, you know, putting stress on my heart. And so the heart rate would end up spiking and the pace just like really would slow down. And so what I noticed with, you know, using the RPE as kind of the measuring block for what that workout is going to be, kind of reframed my perception of like running economy and running fitness. One of the things that used to freak me out doing like the heavy heart rate focused training was when you're focusing on working within those zones, there was like a weird mental response that I personally was having. And I'm sure there's people that can work through this and ignore it. But when it starts climbing, you start freaking out and feeling like something's going wrong, that that you're doing something wrong during that training. And what I really like about the RPE is I'm going off of how I feel that day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were certain runs where like I would text you and be like, oh, that one was like a true two on the 2 to 3, and finding what that groove is, like the difference between a 2 and a 3 on a 2 to 3 easy pace. I know it's really like minuscule and probably stupid to kind of hash out like this, but that too, on those days where you're just not feeling it, or you did a really gnarly long run the weekend before and just kind of feeling where your legs are at and kind of doing that and getting your time on feet and just kind of cruising, and that paid dividends down the road, I believe. Running those easy runs at that 2 to 3 RPE started paving the way and building the blocks on doing these speed sessions. So as that 2 and 3 RPE was starting to increase and those easy runs were getting easier and faster, when we started stacking on some of the VO2 max stuff that we were doing and started doing some of the lactate threshold stuff, that compound effect that wound up presenting itself 2 or 3 months down the road when we were getting ready to go into that endurance block. And the one run that I feel like I remember specifically was when you kind of started adding in those threshold intervals in the middle of that long run and feeling my body's ability to be out on a long run, do 20 to 30 minutes of like an elevated threshold, bounce back, hold a really strong, easy pace, do it again, and then finish out the run strong on another easy pace. Feeling, I almost like view it as like blowing air into balloons for like these certain areas of fitness that you're trying to dump into. So like the more time that you're spending, you know, working on that like easy pace, like that balloon inflates and gets larger. So you have more, I guess, capacity to deplete in that area. And as you're doing training in those higher thresholds, like the 4-5, the 6-7, you're getting stronger in those. There's almost this trickle down effect where like you get stronger in that easy pace because of the work that you're doing at those higher thresholds. And I was able to reap the benefits of that throughout training. And dude, it was fun. It was so much fun.
Yeah, man. Oh, dude, I love that breakdown. Like, thank you for the extensive breakdown on that. And I think it was awesome to see, because you nailed it on your head with the heart rate, like really, really, especially prevalent here in Arizona where it's so hot. I mean, and this goes for a lot of people in the summer months too, when it can get really, really hot. But like, to your point, you beautifully said it. It was like, sometimes people look at the heart rate and they see the high heart rate and it's like, oh, I must be doing something wrong, when heart rate is just a cumulative view of everything, all the impacts in your life, not just running at that given time. So like if you drink, you know, caffeine, it's going to raise your heart rate. If you maybe didn't get a lot of sleep the night before, like that's going to raise your heart rate. If you are out there in higher temperatures, it's going to raise your heart rate. But even though you might feel like you can go easier, like that heart rate isn't exactly a one-to-one on like your true potential. And I think it was super, super cool, like seeing this in your training, because like we saw, like, and talk to me, I guess, about like your pace drop at like a 2 to 3 RPE prior versus now. Cause like that is like, it was one of the coolest freaking things to see that change.
So when we started, I actually went back and took a peek at everything. When we started, my easy pace was about 12 to 11 and a half minutes per mile. And when we were finishing up getting ready to, I think this was taper week, my easy pace was like floating anywhere between like 7:45 to 8:10.
So like fucking awesome.
Fully conversational. I mean, I would take phone calls when I was doing these runs, like talking to family members, because usually I would go after work and, you know, I'd have a family member that's like, hey, I know you've been working all day, can I give you a quick call? And it's like, yeah, I've got my headphones in, like, give me a call. And they're like, what is that noise? I'm like, oh, it's just my feet hitting the ground. You're fine. Like,
just don't worry about it. Just don't worry about it.
just keep talking. It's actually like helping my mind focus on something else to just get this hour and 15 minute run done. So that was actually something that was kind of fun too, where like those easy runs, they can get a little monotonous. They do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a complete lunatic and I liked doing my flat, easy miles, like on this same 3/4 mile dirt loop. So one of those things with, you know, trying to, you know, distract myself, cause I like getting all the data on Strava and seeing how that performance was going, you know, take a phone call here and there, make sure you're at that easy conversational pace and can actually talk to somebody and make sure you're in that correct zone. And you're not like, hey, how's it going? and like doing one of those, because that can feel like an easy pace sometimes, man. And sometimes that's not, or most times it's not where you should be if you're trying to do an easy run. So kind of little tricks here and there that I would do. And like, I would put music on that I would like try to hum along with or sing along with. And then even when I would pass people, especially if I was doing an easy run on trail, like making sure that I didn't have to quickly gather myself to like say good morning to somebody that I'm passing, or like, hey, how's it going? Mm-hmm. Like making sure that I'm not like, how's it going? Like, you know what I mean? So just goofy little stuff like that on navigating the training. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and I freaking love that, man, because like to your point, for listeners listening, like as we're running like the 2 to 3 RPE that we're talking about, like you should be able to have a conversation, like, and it should be conversational. So I love that you're like calling people, because it's a great way to like check those things and like see like, hey, like, am I actually having a conversation here? Like, am I actually in the right RPE, so to say? Because so many times people can say, yeah, I'm running 2 to 3 RPE, but they're kind of talking like this, like you're kind of mentioning before. And it's like, eh, might want to dial it down a little bit. So that's, I love the, like, those little tricks and everything to kind of get it done too. And like, I think the thing that was just so awesome about it is like you beforehand, I remember like you mentioning like with the training that like, you know, if you probably told yourself, like just based on our conversations, like 2 years ago, if you told yourself you were doing most of those runs on that like quarter dirt loop, like super flat kind of stuff, you would have been like, this fucking sucks. But then you like really started to love it. And I remember you were texting me and being like, you know, what brought that love like to that different kind of modality? I'm super curious.
Man, I think there was a lot of compounding factors that really did build into it. And I don't want to completely take away from like the heart rate style training, yep, because one thing that I think played into some of the success long-term was I had a humongous aerobic base from like that 8 to 9 months of doing that complete focused heart rate training. Big break. So I don't know how much of that actually like physiologically carries over or anything like that, but it felt like all of these different things just really started to like kind of meld together. And then, you know, I'm a freaking data nerd sometimes, dude, like watching these all progress, and even just, you know, watching my family respond to me coming home from my runs, where it was like, I'm getting home from even long runs that I'm doing at that easy pace, and I'm not tanked. You know, that was one of the biggest things that was kind of a friction point and almost led to me stepping away from the sport completely. I mean, a calendar year ago,
I remember that
was going out on the weekends, being gone for, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours if there's transit, you know what I mean? And coming home and just being like a shell of myself, and my kids wanting to play, and, you know, needing to get stuff done on the weekend because I'm not working, and just feeling like I'm dragging, dude, and just not feeling like I'm able to be present in those moments that kept me away from that I'm not having to like have work obligations and things of that nature. So that's where I will say, and like attest to the RPE stuff, man, is when you're listening to your body, feeling out what you need that day, it starts rewiring everything. I mean, dude, there was even one of the long runs that I went out and did. I'm paying absolutely no attention to heart rate. I'm just kind of taking it easy. And I was feeling beat up and tired, and my pace was a little bit slower, and it just kind of was what it was. You kind of come to terms with like, there's no metric that I'm trying to meet. I'm really just going off what my body's responding to and how it's feeling that day. And I think that also kind of helped me dial in nutrition and things of that nature, because I was responding to what I was feeling, and the intake would change kind of based off of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the pre-call, things that we were talking about with some of the race debrief, you have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to make changes. If you're too rigid on the plan, I think you're just going to set yourself up for a lot of frustration. And when you're deep into a race, you know, at mile 65, when my body's locking up and I feel like I can't move my legs, being able to pivot, having experience with assessing how my body's feeling in those moments and changing things up based off of that, I think it's the reason I performed, you know, decently well at Coldwater.
Hey, everybody. Just want to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from John G, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out John G's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at johng.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking John G in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to johng.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here. 100%, man. I love that you added that flexibility notion to it because, yeah, like that's like the big thing is like being flexible with the plan. Like I always say, like a training plan should never be taken as like the gospel of the Lord. Like, you know, like you got to be flexible with it because life will throw curveballs. Like life will throw challenges and changes. And like you need to do it in a way. And I think like that was like the cool, that's always like the cool part of like, I like working with athletes is because like I remember when I, started ultra training and I was self-coached following a training plan. If I would miss a day, I wouldn't know how the hell like to put it in, or I'd maybe like stack a workout on top of another. And then like you fuck that up because like everything on the training plan, like builds off of each other. It's like just nice to have that like co-collaboration, which is great. Cause you would just text me and be like, hey man, like got a, you know, crazy day at work, or hey, like, you know, Cooper's sick today or whatever. Right. Like I need to be with the family. It's like, great. No problem, man. Like we're going to move this around. And like, it was just so cool to see you adapt to that flexibility a lot better and also trust the process, which has been really, really cool to kind of see throughout itself. I'm curious, talk to me about like your nutrition too. Like I'd love to hear a little bit about that before we kind of dive into like the cold water stuff. Like what was kind of like your nutrition like? How did you kind of test that out? Like talk to me a little bit about that aspect.
I had tinkered around with it a little bit in the past, and I feel like I really was able to kind of lock in on getting the amount of food that I wanted in my stomach going into the run. I think that was one of the biggest lessons that I learned on the long runs was I would typically go into my long runs fasted. I don't like eating breakfast very much. I'm a black coffee drinker at heart anyways. And I like salty water. So that's kind of like my morning ritual anyways. So it was always one of those things where it's like, well, why change this up just because I'm going to be running for a longer amount of time? And so, you know, pre-fueling was one of the biggest things, that I think I learned during this training block, getting that big breakfast in. So you're not starting in a calorie deficit going into a long run was really, really beneficial. Most of my shorter runs, I was doing fasted. I avoided doing speed work fasted, which I think was good because obviously it's a higher output. You're going to be burning a lot more. So I learned a lot of lessons during that. my nutrition plan on race day, man, I'm a big, big fan of Spring Energy. So those awesome sauce, dude, I can crush those things down. I don't know if I can look at one right now after consuming those for 25 hours. And even talking to the point that we just went over, like being able to pivot, my nutrition strategy was originally, Stinger waffles, Spring Energy, awesome sauce, salt pills, and then Tailwind.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. That worked really well during training, and I was never getting bonky. Everything was going really good during long runs. I wasn't getting, you know, super fatigued, like no muscle cramps. I knew the electrolytes were where they needed to be. I knew my water intake per hour was where it needed to be. I was getting a good amount of carbohydrates and everything like that. So I felt dialed in there. Race day, man. I think I ate 4 or 5 Stinger waffles and my stomach was like, we ain't fucking with that today, buddy. So, I was sticking to everything else. And then when I was getting to aid stations, I was trying to eat, something, cause my plan was I would take the awesome sauce down and those were, I think 180 calories each. Mm-hmm. I was getting good calorie intake from there, liquid calories from the Tailwind, electrolytes from the salt pills. And then I liked having the Stinger waffles because they feel a little bit more dense to kind of sit in my stomach and kind of keep things from getting like irritated or getting any GI issues. So what I ended up having to do, I would grab like some pretzels or like a PB&J at the aid stations to kind of compensate for the like bone dry Stinger waffles that just weren't doing it that day, man. So that's going to be something I'll assess. Kind of going into this next training block on finding the substitute there.
Yeah, 100%, man. And I love that you talk about pivoting the nutrition thing because, yeah, I think it's always good to have like all those options, right? Like as many options as possible. Like everybody knows on the team where I kind of talk about like making like that whole list, like the whole menu of things that you can kind of pick and choose and grab from like on the nutrition plan. Because, yeah, like you can have something that works like well in training, but there's been many times, like even if you're going out on like a 6 or 7 hour kind of long run, where like that could work great, but then you're at like, you know, hour 8 or 9 in the 100 miler and all of a sudden your stomach is like, yeah, no way, Jose, like you need to have that alternate stuff. So the fact that you pivoted with that nutrition is great and that you had that plan to do so, because like that plan to pivot is so important to have because it inevitably happens. Like very rarely does someone have like the perfect, like they set the nutrition plan and like it, they follow it to a T, and I don't mean follow by the T by just a matter of carelessness, but sometimes the stomach has different plans in mind. So having that backup is super, super useful as well, which is great. Kind of like rounding out like the last part of like the podcast, we talked about like the training and things like that. And I'm curious, like I talked about, like you talked about like your biggest kind of, like gem in the race with like Don't Stop, and we talked about the RPE training. What would you also say too is like kind of besides like the RPE stuff and besides maybe the nutrition stuff, what was like another big kind of win for you in training that like you feel like really helped you, that anyone who's listening who's training for 100 miler, you know, can take away with you know, their own training if they're heading into the next 100 miler or any ultra in general?
I think one of the biggest things that helped me was talk to people, man. Mm. Get involved in the sport in ways that are not centered around your races. One of the things that I've been very privileged to be able to do, and I know I've watched you do it with Sally and getting to crew and pace her during all of her runs. And I know you crewed Scott Traer at Western mm-hmm. States, man. Get out there, get involved, and be a student. Like, pay attention. There's so many little things that these people all do that lead to success at these different areas of the race. Like going into cold water. So my pacer Darren, he's won a couple 100 milers. I think he won Stagecoach 2-3 years ago. He's done Western States, UTMB. He's got a really great resume, and one of the things that he suggested was swapping packs with my crew. And I think, you know, early in the race, you know, I didn't finish out, you know, where I was kind of performing, but there was a good 55 miles that I was within top 20 for a good amount of time and holding strong within there. And shout out to my crew, man. They were so efficient. I built out like the most insane spreadsheets on like detailing every little thing that they needed to do every single time that I saw them. And dude, they leaned into it. They were ready. Those first two small loops, I think what kind of started separating me from that mid pack to kind of, you know, hang out in that top 20 for as long as I did was aid station efficiency, not spending time talking to everybody. I need this. I need this. That was predetermined. I had bags that were ready to go for like, stop one. This is what's going into my pack. These are the pouches that it's going into. There's two scoops of Tailwind going into this bottle. I've got a backup back here. This pocket has these things. The big pouch will have night gear, you know, at this stop, and making it really easy for them to just make sure that we were all successful. Like, this is somewhat of a team sport, man. And my family, we didn't grow up around ultras or running or anything like that. So we kind of sat down the night before and I went through everything with everybody. And so much of my success that day was went into the planning, thinking through everything and getting a crew that knew how to perform and knew what to do, to the point where like, they're asking me now, like, when's the next one? What are we doing? And, you know, the next thing on my docket is Sedona Canyons. I'm one out on the wait list. So I'm hoping by the time this thing comes out, that's all official and I'll be signed up for that, man. And they're stoked. They're like suggesting things that they think we could do differently, that they think would help. And it was really cool, man, like seeing my family all come together in this really, really special way that was supporting a dream that I've had for 2 or 3 years now, man. Watching them kind of lean into it, because at the end of the day too, man, like there's a lot of sacrifice that goes into these things. And, you know, I kind of mentioned this to you at the beginning or right before the race, like this was a celebration of all of the sacrifice, all of the training, everything that all of us, you know, dumped into this. Like, it was so cool to watch that come together, man. And even another little caveat on top of that, Coldwater got, you know, redone a little bit so that it kind of has this javelina feel where you keep coming through this really big area that everybody's kind of staged around, man. And I've got a 5-year-old whose name's Cooper, and the first couple loops that I'm coming in, he's like standing at the side there, like waving me in, like, come on, come on, come on. And watching him soak in that race and cheering me on, dude, was like as cool as completing that race myself. There's even a picture that I've got that I threw up on my Instagram, man. The first time that I turned the corner and came into Coldwater Ranch, you kind of run up this service road to get in there. He was standing at the gate and he's just like up with his hands up, man. And it was just like, oh, dude, just like the coolest thing in the world, man. If there's anything that's going to like light a fire under your ass and make you dig in and finish a race, it's your son with his arms up in the air, just cheering you on, just absolutely amazed at what you're doing. And, we finished the race and he's sitting next to me and he walks up to me. I was like, what'd you think, man? What'd you think of the race? Like, he walks up to me and looks at me. Do you think I could ever do something like that, Dad? And I said, not only can you, buddy, but I'll help you do it.
Let's go. Let's go. Dude, cool. But he's going to be kicking our ass by the time he's our age.
Dude, he's going to be dusting us, man.
Wow, man, I got emotional like hearing that. Like, and I don't even have kids yet, but I think it was just so powerful how you mentioned, you said like that moment was more powerful than actually doing the race itself. Like, that's just so freaking cool. And also too, like, you definitely did the crew strategy right if they're saying like they want to come back. Like, so like, kudos to you, man. Like, because a lot of times to the crew they're like, thanks for the invite, but I think it's a testament to you like outlining everything and having that clear communication. And you know, you and I, we reviewed that plan together. Like, it was great. Like, I mean, I was like, this is awesome. This is like what you need. And I think it's that clear communication that led to like the crew, like just being excited about the journey and like knowing exactly what to do, and led to that aid station efficiency, which was awesome, man. And I think, you know, having especially like your family out there, like the people who are the most important to you in your life, has got to be just a rewarding experience for sure, man. So that is an awesome story. And so cool to see Cooper was cheering you on like that out there. It's so freaking special, man. For the last part of the pod, I'd love to talk about the race, like kind of itself, like the meat and the potatoes of the race. So talk to me about kind of how it went, the pacing. Obviously, you know, spoiler alert, we all know, like, you finished the race and did great out there, and you made it out in one piece as on this pod. But talk to me a little bit about how the race went, how you paced it, the ups, the downs, trials and tribulations, kind of like the behind the scenes of the Coldwater 100 in your experience.
Yeah. And it, you know, we kind of mentioned this in the debrief, but going into it, man, my mentality was I wanted to go out there and be a vessel. And I wanted to just channel everything that the race had to offer. It'd been a long buildup to it, man. And I just wanted to like take the full experience of this thing. And I don't mean to overinflate. I know, you know, in this sport, like, there's people that do these things, you know, 6-7 times a year, man. So I don't mean to overinflate it by any means, but it was a really special race for me, man. And I just wanted to receive everything that race had for me. And I think going in with that mentality really set the tone for it, man. I remember being in the trailer that I had set up for the crew, and they called everybody over, walked over, and kind of hung out with Elsa for a little bit. She had just taken second at Tahoe 200, and I had connected with her via social media, and her buddy Damon, who I believe you've had on, correct?
I haven't had on, but I've ran with him at Javelina, and like we stay back and forth too. He's an awesome dude. Shout out Damon. He's amazing.
He's such good energy, man. And just, you know, finally getting to meet them in person, and just like that, dude, there is nothing like the start line of these events, dude, whether you're doing like a 50K or Cocodona 250, like that moment is so electric. So, you know, I said hi to Elsa, and I just kind of like hung out in the middle and just like took that moment in, dude. And I'm like watching the start line, and there's like Andrew Glaze and Jeff Browning, and the fucking Speed Goat is towing the line, dude. And I just took that moment in, man. And I, you know, kind of, we took off on that first loop and was hanging out mid pack and just kind of doing my thing, taking it really easy, probably going a little slower than I wanted to, but trying to be mindful of what's ahead. And so wrapped up that first loop, felt great. Went out for the second and was very ready to get that second loop done. That first 10-mile section was gnarly. And so coming out of there and had shared some miles with Andrew Glaze, which was something that we talked about that I wanted to do. I've got a ton of respect for that guy. And then getting to kind of slip past, you know, Jeff Browning's coming out for the start of his second loop when I'm, you know, going in for my first, and just like watching the way that guy moves on a trail was like so cool, man. Like, Jeff is such an inspiration for me because I've gotten like into this a little bit later in life. Like, I'm 33, and I know that's not super old, but like watching what he's done at his age, dude, like there's, I think him and like Scott Traer specifically, I think, paint this picture for people that it's like, dude, if you can stay consistent and take care of yourself and do all these things, like, you can not only do these things later in life, but perform really well. And so I'll kind of end that tangent and dive back into a little bit of the race brief, but, finish up that second loop, was feeling really good. Did a quick like outfit change, but switched up what I was wearing. We thought it was going to be hot that day, and it fucking rained and was like just gloomy and weird all day. Went out for my second loop, and I was hanging out with Glaze for quite a bit and chatting with him. And he had some pretty sage advice, man. He was, you know, we were kind of trotting along and just sharing some miles. And he's like, just brace yourself for your first night. Like, it's, things are going to change and things are going to get different. And so I knew, you know, going into it that was going to be a challenge that I was going to have to push through. And I felt really strong all the way through, you know, mile 47. I picked up my first pacer, and I had mentioned him earlier, Darren. Man, I can't thank that guy enough. He pushed me through the night, and you know, when you first go into that first loop, it's like a 9 mile climb, dude. It's pretty rough. We finished that up, and I was getting to that point where things were starting to get hairy, man. My quads were turning into rocks. My hamstrings were starting to do some things too. My hip flexors felt like a rod at a couple of different moments in the race, and having my pacer there to just kind of remind me like, hey, this is normal. It's okay. You didn't do anything wrong. Let's just keep moving. And you know, he was kind of walking me through doing this body scan, like check in on yourself, like head to toe, start with your feet, work your way up. What's hurting, what's not hurting. Let's kind of focus on that. Mm-hmm. And so one of the strategies that we kind of implemented was doing that body scan. Whatever's feeling good at that moment in time, let's adjust the stride or the pace to kind of focus on an area on something that feels like it's working correctly at that time. And there was a really funny story, man. We're climbing, and there was one big climb before you kind of drop down and you get some like rolly fun single track before you go into Coldwater Ranch. And dude, I was having to like squat down in this like Spider-Man pose, it felt like, and stretch and kind of twist to get my left hip flexor to unlock. And I looked like a crazy person. I probably looked like a complete idiot, just like squatted down on the side of the trail. And there was a gentleman, John Bodden, and his group does this Circle of Hell run every year. And they're great dudes. And he kind of checked on me as I was like going past. He's like, you good? I'm like, I'm good. Just give me a second. Like, I'm kind of, you know, fighting some demons right now. And it was probably 5-6 miles later, things just corrected themselves. And this is kind of what I was talking about earlier with like, just don't stop, man. Like, it's going to work itself out. You might have to make some adjustments and, you know, change some things up here and there, but it's going to be okay. And so everything was okay. And I caught this wind, man, and I go ripping past like 3 or 4 people that had passed me on that climb when I was just dying. And they're like, oh, you're back, or something of that nature. I don't remember exactly what he said. And I remember cruising, and I looked back at Darren after we'd gotten past him a little bit, and I was like, I'm back from the dead, motherfuckers. Like, so that was a fun little moment that was mixed in there, man. And then, you know, honestly, like kind of finishing out the race, it was kind of a mixture of some power hiking, walking, and then just finding when I could run and enjoying those moments, man, enjoying that process and that pain and all of those different things that emotional roller coaster that you go through, was kind of the way that finished out, man. And I remember climbing, coming in from that last loop, knowing that the job was done, man. You can see Phoenix International Raceways right there in the distance. You can look down and you can see the finish line. And, our good buddy, Aaron Fleischer, I get over the hill, man. And he had climbed up into the course, and I'm coming down, getting ready to kind of round out this last like 3/4 miles. And I can see him with his phone. He's like, let's fucking go, baby. And it was just, it was so good, man. And I remember just cruising down that trail, and I hit the parking lot, and I just turned it on, dude. That, you know, that adrenaline dump where it's like your body just doesn't give a shit at that point. And I just let it fucking rip going into the finish line. And my family's all waiting for me. We all 4 crossed together, and it was a pretty beautiful finish, man. It was cool.
Oh man, so good. So freaking good. And so many things in there, from like the body scan to like Glaze's information on, you know, just expecting things to change, and then also getting a second wind, even at the point when, you know, you feel like you're battered and like you can't go anymore. Like, there's just so many good gems and nuggets. And on top of it all, Aaron coming fresh off of my wedding too, which is, for those who are wondering, like, I wasn't there because I was doing a little thing like called getting married, and Aaron was there. And I remember, like, as he was leaving, he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go see Kiefer finish. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, sending my love. So so cool to see that, man. And man, you earned every ounce of that 100 mile finish, man. And it came down to all the training, all the efforts, all the consistency, all the discipline that you put in to get there, man. And it's just so freaking awesome to see you go through and get that 100-mile belt buckle. And it just says just so many just measures about the amazing stuff you're going to do for Sedona Canyons and the other races you have this year too, which are going to be incredible, man. So could not be more stoked and proud of you and honored to be your coach too. And it's just going to be an awesome ride heading into Sedona Canyons, which, yes, hoping you're off the wait list by the time this drops for sure. Anyways, man, this has been awesome. But before I ask my last question that I ask every single guest on the podcast, please follow along Kiefer's journey. Link is in the show notes to his Instagram handle, and you can check his information out. Please follow him along. Like I said, he's an ambassador for Arizona Wilderness here in Arizona as well. Great, great spot to grab some food too, which is awesome. And super cool to have you on the podcast here, Kiefer. This has been amazing, my friend. And for the last question on here, you recapped so many just amazing gems on here, which are so awesome. But I'm curious for you, because this show is called Everyday Ultra, a whole ethos of the show is helping our listeners be better endurance athletes. And so for you, my friend, what can our listeners do every single day to be better endurance athletes?
Just one little thing, man. Whether that's taking a rest day to let your body recover, whether that's, you know, going out, getting that run done at, you know, 10 PM when you had a crazy day at work. I think that there is some magic in consistency. And I think sometimes that gets a little misconstrued as like consistent 100-mile weeks or consistent, you know, just these insane training numbers that you see a lot of these guys doing. The behind the scenes of what those guys have done for 7, 8, 9, 10 years is taking care of themselves also. And we see so much stuff on like optimization and things of that nature. I think if you can just do one little thing every single day, that's going to help push or just move the needle, push you into that next day. It's just the consistency there, man. And, you know, I've said it a couple times throughout the podcast, but just don't give up. There's going to be those days that it sucks. Running's fucking hard, man. There's nothing easy about this sport. There is no gimmies on any of this stuff, man. Lean into having a community. Find people you can talk to about this stuff. Find a good coach. Whatever you need to do to just stay consistent, move that needle, and don't stop. I really do think that that's a recipe to finding whatever your definition of success is in this sport. And it doesn't mean going and winning the Triple Crown of 200s. It doesn't mean like capturing that golden ticket. For me, man, these endurance endeavors are turning into this weird legacy thing for me, man. Like my kids are starting to gain interest in it and they see the things that I do, and take the lessons that you're getting from the training and pour them into your life. I think that's the biggest takeaway, man. These endurance sports are great. I love ultra running. Let this supplement everything else that you're doing in your life. It will improve things. It will show you areas of yourself that you didn't know you could tap into.
So freaking good, man. What a great way to end it is just taking the ultra running lessons and applying it into your life, right? Because we can easily see that as a vacuum. But to your point, right, it affects how your kids look at you. It affects how you show up for your family. Like, I even loved that before, like, and I'm remiss for not bringing this up, but when you talked about how you ultimately were able to do the training, do a long run, then come home and have a lot of energy like for your kids, right? It's like taking those lessons and applying it into their day after day. And you are the epitome of that, my friend. So great advice. Dude, I'm honored to be your coach. So stoked to see what we're going to do at Sedona Canyons together. So stoked to see what you're going to do. And it's going to be an awesome freaking ride, brother. So huge congrats to you. Proud of you, brother. And thanks again for coming on the show, man. You're the fucking man.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe.
Appreciate it.